Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
And now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former Pitt and San Diego Chargers defensive end Bert Grossman. Let me remind you about Bert's background. He's from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, played his college ball at the University of Pittsburgh. He was a first-round draft choice, the 8th overall selection by the San Diego Chargers in 1989, and he played in the league from 89 to 1994 for the Chargers and the Eagles. Over the course of his career, he had 276 tackles, 43.5 sacks, recorded 3 safeties, and forced 3 fumbles. After his playing days, he worked in Philadelphia on a radio show titled Eagles Hour, which he won an Emmy for Best Sports Reporter in 1995. 96, he published a book titled The Way Things Oughta Be. In 2011, he was selected as the NFL Teacher of the Year for the impact he has had on his students' educational and life skills development. He's been doing tremendous things over the years in the San Diego community. He's become a wonderful friend of the show. And we're very honored he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Bert, Chris and Bob here. Thanks for coming back on the show.
Welcome back, Bert.
Thank you. Anytime, gentlemen. I love coming on here.
So, Bert, I want to start by getting your thoughts on Pitt. You know, they finished 8-5 this year. It's sort of the third time in the 5 years that Pat Narduzzi's been the head coach there that they finished with that record. And boy, they haven't won double-digit games going back to the glory years under Jackie Sherrill in the early 80s. I'm struggling, Bert. You know how much I love Pitt and being from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, can this program ever kind of get back to where it was in the 70s and early 80s?
I don't, you know, it's hard. I mean, you have to get, I mean, some of these schools now have these facilities that are just look like theme parks. You know, Pitt being a city school, they're never going to have that. I thought it was horrible that they took Pitt Stadium away. I think that really killed the atmosphere.
Yeah.
I mean, you can watch it on high school. But you get no students. You know, they share a facility with the Steelers on the south side where I think they have to bus to every day. So it's not really a collegiate feel. And they don't, you know, back in the days when they were really good, they anybody they wanted in Western PA, they got. Anybody they wanted in New Jersey or Florida, they got, and they're just not getting those guys anymore. I mean, they would always be top five in recruiting classes. And if you look now, they're in the 30s, 40s. And it's hard to, you know, get to a 10-win season when you're 30 and 40 every year in recruiting.
Yeah. And I agree 100% with what you said, Bert. I mean, this is a program that's fallen certainly way off since those 70s and 80s teams. But, you know, when I look across state to Penn State and all of the issues and that the Penn State had and the program dropped off, but just for a couple of years, and they were able to get right back to where they were. But Pitt's never even not been able to do that. What's the difference? Is it the reverence for Penn State has always been bigger than what it was for Pitt? Or why do you think Penn State got back, but Pitt never did?
You know, I think it's reverence, like you said. I mean, if you go to Philadelphia, they don't get hardly anybody Pitt from Philadelphia, but Penn State has a choice pretty much. So Pitt used to have at least Western Pennsylvania shut down with a couple exceptions. But, you know, if you look at it now, they get the, you know, leftovers from Penn State, leftovers from, you know, Notre Dame. They're not beating those guys out in a lot of picks. I mean, you know, I don't even know when the last time they had a five-star, if they've ever had a five-star recruit. But, you know, it's interesting. I think some people would say it's a coaching turnover. You know, we seem to hire the wrong guys. I mean, I think Graham set the program back pretty far. I don't know about Narduzzi, to be honest with you. The one thing Pitt hasn't had is a quarterback since Dan Marino or John Kangemi. So, and that's 30 years. I mean, there's been game managers like you talk about Andy Dalton, those guys, but there hasn't been a real playmaking quarterback at Pitt for a long, long time. And I think that always hurts them. I mean, their defense has gotten pretty good now. But they just, you know, Pickett, I like Pickett, but he doesn't seem like he progressed a lot first year. You know, now going into a senior year, and we get these grad transfers that don't pan out. You know, I thought the guy, was it Matt Brown from USC, was going to be great. He wasn't.
Right.
We got another one this year. Yeah, or Arizona. Didn't we get one from Arizona? I don't know. But we're always looking, and we just never seem to get the guy at quarterback. And, you know, Penn State does. Penn State hired the right guy with Franklin, and he's been there. You know, we had Todd Graham, and we had some other people and that just get up and leave for better jobs. So, I think it's partly the coaching. I like Narduzzi, but, you know, for fourth, fifth year, I don't think they're where they wanted to be. I mean, you're 8-5, but, and, you know, the problem is always Manning with Pitt. They could be 10-1, but, you know, or 10-3, but they lose these games that you're just baffled at. They lose, and then they beat these ranked teams that you're baffled at how they do it. But they're so inconsistent, and they've been that way for 20 years.
Bert, I want to switch gears a little bit and get your thoughts on the Chargers. And when you look at, you know, them now in L.A., it sort of seemed like to me that they played 16 road games this year. I know as a Steelers fan, when the Steelers went out there and played them, it seemed like the Steelers fans took over the whole stadium. There weren't any Charger fans there. So for you as a guy that, you know, stayed out in San Diego, have the fans, you know, continued to embrace them at all, or have they sort of washed their hands of the Chargers and now LA have at it?
I think they've pretty much washed their hands of them to a point. And I think the people that were behind them or still behind them can't afford the experience. I mean, you're talking about a 2-hour drive. They're charging $100 to park where, you know, they're charging. I mean, you can buy season tickets as a fan and get triple your money. It's better than the stock market. It's better than IRA. Just selling it to, you know, visiting teams. Because it's such a small venue. So they're not getting a lot. And like you said, there might be 2,500 at best Charger fans. I mean, an NFL game, that's embarrassing for a team that was supposed to go to the Super Bowl. So granted, they had a horrible year, but, you know, they came off a 12-win season last year, and their opener was the same. I mean, it just never changes. People just aren't excited. LA's USC, LA's UCLA, the Dodgers, the Lakers, the Rams. I mean, it's not the Chargers. I mean, that's a notoriously packed town of things to do and hard to get a fan base. And I think it was probably one of the worst moves in sports history, to be honest with you.
Five questions for Bert.
Yeah, Bert, it's always great to have you back on. And I think we touched upon a few times ago, Pennsylvania being a hotbed for football at both the high school and college level. I think I mentioned to you, I went to graduate school at the University of New Haven, and they would play teams like Indiana and Kutztown and Slippery Rock. And a lot of these teams, yeah, they came up to Connecticut, and they were very, very, very good. And you know that they got a lot of players that probably just couldn't get to Pitt or Penn State, but they were incredibly talented. Tell us about the Pennsylvania that you remember being a hotbed. You haven't gone to high school in Radnor, Pennsylvania. Just talk about the, maybe it's the blue collar stuff, Bert.
Yeah, and we had, you know, and it goes back to Pitt's recruiting. I remember being at Pitt, and I think we probably had three players of the year, national player of the year, come through Pitt when I was there. I mean, Brian Davis, I don't know if you remember, Mark Spindler, God, who was Curtis Bray. They don't get that anymore. And I think you get teams like Slippery Rock and Kutztown and Lockheed. I mean, there's so many of them. I can't, Shippensburg. I mean, they're all over the place. But it's great there. You see, if you watch their games, and sometimes I watch them, and it's funny because I'm the head coach of the arena football team in San Diego now. So mm-hmm. I get a ton of film from players like that. And they're really just as good as every Division I kid. They just, that split second of, do you run a 4-3 or 4-4? No, I run a 4-5, 4-6. Makes them go to a school like that, but they're just as ball hawking. They, you know, they know everything about the game. They know the play. I mean, everything's the same except, you know, 0.2 seconds. And that puts them down a level.
Amazing to me. And we always talk to first round draft picks, we always get into the draft, Bert, and I don't think people realize that 89 draft, we usually hear the quarterback drafts of the years before that, but when you have an 89 draft of guys like Aikman and Barry Sanders and the late Derek Thomas, Dion and yourself and our friend Tim Worley, we can go on and on. But what do you remember about the draft day? You were the first pick of the Chargers. I know it's not as theatric as it now. Tell us your memories of that.
Yeah. My memories were, and it wasn't like it was now. I mean, I was in Philadelphia and I didn't even get invited to New York. Tony Mandridge, who's the other one that was there? Yeah, Barry Sanders. I mean, that was a loaded draft. Andre Rison too. Steve Atwater. I mean, they just had a ton in that. I think you could say pound for pound the best draft ever. But you know, for me, it was way different. I went out the night before and got drunk like everybody does. And then I get a call in the morning, and it was Mike Ditka. And he called and said, hey, we're trying to work a deal or swap with San Diego or Denver. It was going to be San Diego, Denver, or the Bears at 10. And he said, we're going to try to work it out and get you, but you might go before. I'll keep you posted. And then I never heard anything again. So I was watching. This is how bad the Chargers are even then, this screwed up organization. I'm watching on TV, and I get picked, not called by the Chargers. They called me after I got picked. So wow. I saw it on TV, and then the phone rang like 3 or 4 minutes later. I should have known that. I'm like, good Lord. So I actually wanted to go to Chicago. I mean, that's where I wanted to go, but I didn't get a chance to.
So, Bert, when you ended up going to San Diego, and when I look at the roster of players on the offensive side and the defensive side, a lot of great talent there. I mean, one of the first names I was thinking on the offensive side, your quarterback, your first year, Jim McMahon. What was it like, speaking of the Bears, too? What was it like playing with McMahon?
He was everything they said he was. That wasn't an act. He was everything they said. I mean, he would terrorize rookies and haze rookies and everything else. I remember I was the last one left because I signed probably a day before camp ended. So I held out the whole time and I signed the week of the opener. So I had to hide because he'd have a golf cart and he'd light up like torches, like he was going out and he'd get a whole gang of veterans and they would just go terrorize people and tie them up and do donuts around them. So I hid the whole night. It was like The Purge, that movie, The Purge. So I kind of got out of that. But other than that, he is everything they said he was.
On the defensive side, you got to play with Leslie O'Neal and Gary Plummer, our good friend Vincey Glenn, Billy Ray Smith on that defense. Gil Bird was there. And then obviously Junior Seau. So a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. Talk about being a part of that unit.
We did. And you know what? It's this thing that it seems to follow me forever. We always have a good defense. I think we were pretty much, even when we were terrible, we were ranked, top 10 defense. We usually finished. It was always Minnesota or us that would finish, in the lead for sacks. But we never had a quarterback pretty much. McMahon got hurt early. They tried to go with Billy Joe Tolliver. We really didn't have a quarterback, and it was kind of the same thing at Pitt. I mean, I could name the guys at defensive Pitt, and they're all in the NFL or played in the NFL, but we never had a quarterback. So, we went through those, and then we finally got Stan Humphries, and that's when we, won the division. And then the following year was a down year, and then I got traded, but it was the same old, thing pretty much. A lot of defense, no offense.
So, and I'm always curious about, Seau. I mean, the guy had a motor that just wouldn't stop. Did it stop after? Was he a guy that just went hard and crazy, in practice, in the gym? What was Seau like, sort of away from Sundays?
He would go, he would go hard at everything. If it was away from Sundays in the off season, he'd go hard in the weight room. He'd go hard in the casino. He'd go hard in the bar. He liked to party. He never, I always get whole weekend, what you do? Oh, I watch movies. He would never, ever do something like that. No matter what he did, he got up at 5 a.m. He was my roommate, so he was an insomniac, so he didn't really sleep. He was always going, always put that aura on. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anybody that big, that strong, and that fast, and that athletic in my life. I mean, it was almost, unfair that somebody got that much athleticism. He was different. He had in his house, he had a whole training room, almost like a doctor's office built, and he would have the trainers and the doctors see him at his house because he didn't want anybody in football to think he, was hurt or he had a chink in his armor or anything like that. So when everybody's getting treatment and taped and doing those other things, and, Junior would be just as hurt, but he would make everybody go to his house and he wouldn't let anybody see him hurt or even sore or anything.
Bert, just one more before we let you go. And you have certainly been a guy who's made a big positive impact in the San Diego community for a long time. And we love spotlighting players that are doing great things and giving back. We've got a whole segment about it at the end of the show. But, talk about, what you're doing now. You mentioned you're a head coach now in the Arena League. But talk about some of the other things that you stay involved with in the San Diego community.
Well, I still have a school that, for kids that are in gangs and coming out of juvenile detention, and we teach them, vocation, and it's also school. It's like a split curriculum. I have the, wheelchair sports for the kids. We have a big camp every year, which is amazing. Every July for a week, like 70 kids in wheelchairs, get to do all sports and water sports and everything else. And that's about it. I do the news out here, and then I started doing the football last year. So that we're a new expansion team. So that's been an interesting experience. But I'm pretty full up other than that. Between that and my two kids, I get pretty full.
So Bert, let our listeners know, how can they stay up to date with all the great things you're doing and follow you, whether it's online or it's on social media?
Well, Facebook, but God, you know my Twitter better than me. I don't even know my Twitter handle. Is it Bert? What is my Twitter handle? I don't even know it. I have no clue. I get on there, but I don't ever look at it. I think it's Bert_Grossman.
Bert_Grossman. That's right. Bert_Grossman.
I think it is. I'm not positive, though. Yeah, I'm not positive.
Yeah, it is.
But I think.
You're right.
I know you guys put it out. You always put out follow great people, and I figure you must know it. I have no clue what it is.
Well, Bert, we can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back. It's always a treat to get to spend some time with you. We hope you'll come back and join us again soon, my friend. You're fantastic.
Anytime. Thank you, guys.
Take it easy, Bert.
Take care, Bert.
Hey, by the way, do you have Keith Millard on tonight?
Yeah,
Keith's going to come up here in about 20 minutes.
Oh, tell him. You know what? He was my favorite player when I was playing, believe it or not.
Oh, that's cool.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
College, I used to watch his film. You know, I mean, well, Dolman went to Pitt, Chris Dolman. So we would watch, in our defensive, D-line meetings, we'd always watch Dolman and Keith Millard. And then, believe it or not, when I got to the Chargers and we had me, Leslie O'Neal, Lee Williams, who had a ton of sacks, we would always watch Keith Millard and Dolman when I got to the Chargers, too, my first year. We would just watch their highlight films during their cutups or their pass rush stuff. So he got to be my favorite player from that. I got two places.
Well, we'll certainly pass that along. I'm sure Keith will get a huge kick out of that. Thanks for sharing that story.
All right. Yeah, no problem. Thank
you, Bert.
All right, we'll see
you here, man. That's the great Bert Grossman. Bob, there's so much to get into with Bert. Every time we have him on, it's just never enough time. But the great things he's doing in the San Diego community is always one that stands out to us.
Absolutely, what he does for the community, and I think his name is synonymous with the Chargers, Chris, but he played his last season before a devastating injury in Philadelphia, so the prodigal son returned to Philadelphia. That's pretty cool, and we'll get into that next time we speak with him.
All right, we've got our next guest, Tony Collins, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Tony on the other side of this real quick station break.